Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Life Enthusiast Co-op Online Radio Network, restoring vitality to you and to the planet, starring the founder of the Life Enthusiast Co-op, Martin Patella. I'm your co-host, Scott Patton. Hey, Martin, how are you doing today?
Doing great. Thanks for asking. Continuing with, again, the founder, Professor Farrell Brenner, founder of Smart Minerals. Farrell has been so gracious with his time, and I'm finding these sessions utterly fascinating. What do you think about it, Scott?
Yeah, the information is absolutely amazing. We've been getting lots of great feedback from our listeners, so we've asked Farrell to join us once more. And welcome, Farrell.
Thank you so much. I feel very honored to be here and to be able to share this info with other people.
Thanks. I've left a hanging question. I should probably try and repeat it. I asked the word conditional, as in conditional love, conditional self-esteem, conditional anything. I mean, when I think of it, it's like, I will love you if, or I will love you when, or I will be successful when, or I will be happy only if, those kind of statements.
Right.
As opposed to, I give myself a permission to be happy now. Anyway, so why is conditional self-esteem such a problem, Farrell?
Well, let's just hunker down and get into this conditional business. First of all, if you enter into a contract with somebody, for example, they say that they're going to give you 100 pairs of shoes, and you're going to give them $100 or $1,000, and then they don't deliver the shoes, but then they say, where's my money, where's my $1,000? The $1,000 is conditional upon the delivery of the shoes, so the person has no right to ask for the money because they didn't deliver the goods. And society depends on these kinds of contracts. Everybody agrees on that, right? Right, Scott?
Absolutely.
So, Martin, we need conditional agreements and conditional understanding in society. Isn't that right, Martin?
Certain. Oh, yeah, I just took a holiday. Yes, it is absolutely right.
Okay, then. Where did you go on your holiday, by the way? Maybe I'd like to go there, too. Wasn't the Grand Canyon. We know that because Scott was just there and he didn't see you.
Right. I'll tell you another story a little later, but let's just carry on with your conditional.
Okay. So conditional is part of society, and when we're little kids, we get a lot of training in becoming a part of society. So every good mom and dad wants their kids to learn how to be a good citizen, how to be able to fit into society, how to be a productive person, and get along. And so you know that, you know, if you're going to start jumping up and down in the middle of class while the teacher is talking, and you don't stop, you're probably going to wind up no longer being allowed to sit in that room of the classroom. Your presence there is conditional upon your good behavior. And you get started, so you're going to wind up in the principal's office, or you're going to wind up in detention or something like that. So we're trained in the importance of conditionality right from earliest childhood, because it becomes a life and death situation for a small child. They can't just do whatever they want. And that's where we're at when we first wake up in this body on this planet, wondering what the heck we're doing here. We're naturally just kind of free spirits in a way. But the socialization, the training and how to fit into society starts from the beginning. And the result of this process of socialization is that we learn that we are going to be loved only if. We are going to learn that we're only going to be accepted only if we come up to some standard, only if we have some level of performance or deliver some kind of thing that's valued by other people. So, for example, little kids, they go to school, and it's like they're being judged and graded not just by the teachers but by each other all the time. Who's accepted by whom? Who gets into what cliques? Little boys are picked for teams. And whoever is picked towards the end is the least desirable kid. It's the smallest kid. It's the kid with glasses. It's the kid that nobody likes. It's the whatever. And so the acceptance is very conditional on the appearance and so forth. And every kid who was overweight as a child knows what that's about. Maybe they were overweight as a child, and maybe they grew out of it, maybe they slimmed down, and now they're svelte, they're attractive as adults. But behind all that is still a fat kid, a kid who feels that, you know, unless I look a certain way, I won't be loved. And to a certain extent, it's true, isn't it? To a certain extent, people shop for a significant other based on what that person looks like. But if it's real love, it's going to go past that initial phase where it's what the person looks like. What the person looks like is just going to be a broad indicator of what kind of heart that person has. I realized when I was a young man and growing up, I asked myself, because I'm a thoughtful kind of a person, why am I so concerned with what a woman looks like? And I realized that when I was looking at a woman that I was really attracted to having a relationship with, that what I was seeing in that woman's face was a loving disposition, an accepting, warm, and open heart. That's what I was looking for. That's what I wanted. And that's what I got. Okay.
So, Farrell, just before you go, so it was not that you were looking at the woman and thinking, will my friends like me when they see me with her?
That's a great question. When we talk about that other product that I haven't talked about yet called Freedom from Shame and Embarrassment, I want to talk about the issue of how I'm seen by other people. But when we get with somebody because we think that that person is going to raise my status in my group, then we are coming from conditional love. And as soon as that other person doesn't look good enough, we're going to drop them like a hot potato.
So this is where the arm ornament female image comes from, huh? When a man is powerful enough or rich enough that he can have pretty much anything, he ends up with a Porsche in his driveway and a 20-year younger than him, bleach blonde, big bosom something, right?
Well,
nothing to do with love, mind you, but
Certainly not in every case, but certainly all too often in our society, we unfortunately have been very, very programmed by Hollywood, and I keep giving Hollywood sort of a bad rap overall, and I'm sorry about that because I love grew up in the motion picture industry. My family had a movie theater, and that's how I got babysat a lot, was to be put in the theater. So I watch a lot of movies, and I love the movies, but the messages in movies are, if you have a lot of money, if you have a lot of success, if you have great looks, if you're a genetic champion, okay, then you're going to get happiness in life. And guess what? Happiness in life does not depend on those things. Happiness in life is not something that comes from anything outside. Happiness in life comes from something that's inside. And that means it's not conditional upon something outside. It doesn't depend on something outside. So what we're talking about is, do I value myself? If I value myself, is it only because I'm being told that I look good enough, that I have enough money, that my spouse is important enough, that I have enough power, that my car is fancy enough, that my house is big enough, or whatever it is? Does my self-esteem, does my ability to value and accept myself depend on something out there that could be here today and gone tomorrow, that in one movement of the stock market could wipe me out, or in one divorce, or in one health problem, or whatever, just be gone? Well, that kind of happiness, well, if you have it, great, enjoy it while you have it. But what about the kind of happiness that doesn't depend on being a multimillionaire, that doesn't depend on having a trophy husband or wife, that doesn't depend on having a first in the Olympics or whatever it happens to be? What if you're just happy because you're happy? What if you just accept yourself? What if you just love, value, and appreciate your opportunity to be another day on this planet? To have another chance to live and to love, another opportunity to be there for somebody else in a positive and constructive way, to share, to be part of this enormous experiment called life on planet Earth. What about that? What about just being happy because I'm alive? That's what the gift is about. That's what the idea of unconditional love is about. And having that energy and information in the gift is what raises the self-esteem.
Wow.
Having the energy and information of unconditional love and being able to access that by putting a single drop or more on your skin, that it just immediately becomes absorbed and is part of your system, that raises the self-esteem.
So I have a question for you. If that's going to make me so happy and I won't be motivated to strive for all these external symbols, won't that make me kind of lazy? Won't I just simply sit around, daydream, and forget about stock market or going to work or saying yes to the boss or whatever it is that I need to do to keep...
You want to know something? That is a terrific question, Martin. People actually worry about that. That is the dumbest worry on the planet. That is a great question because that's what people think. They have been so long under the dictatorship, under the tyranny of fear-driven behavior, that they don't know what it's like to be able to fly like an eagle, to soar into the sky on wings of creativity, and just find out how exceptional and extraordinary you can be. That's when I started using the gift, when I developed the gift and I started using it, I became a creativity machine. I couldn't believe that my ideas for creativity never stopped. They just kept going and going. I put a pad and pen by my bed so that when I was going to sleep and when I woke up in the middle of the night, I'd be able to write my ideas down. I made so much money that first year, I couldn't believe it. I felt embarrassed that I made so much money. You know, when you're in the groove, you know what pitch to swing at, and you know what pitch not to swing at. You know how to surf the wave, the opportunities of life. You can just take advantage of them when you're in the groove. And what puts you in the groove and what takes you out of the groove? Well, what puts me in my groove, and so far as I've been able to tell, what helps everybody the most, the one single thing that helps everybody the most is love. And by love, I mean this unconditional valuing of yourself and accepting yourself.
You know, Farrell, you reminded me of a story a friend of mine likes to tell, or a demonstration he likes to give, might be a bit more accurate, where he says, okay, he says, has anybody got a $100 bill? And someone hands him a $100 bill, and he says, okay, so I've got this $100 bill. What's the value of it? And everyone goes, $100. And he says, okay. And then he starts yelling at the bill, you useless, worthless piece of paper. And he says, now what's the value of this bill? Everyone goes, $100. Okay. So then he crumples it all up and he throws it on the ground and he stomps on it and then he picks it up again and he says, what's the value of this piece of paper? And everyone goes, it's $100. He says, so no matter what happens to this thing, aside from being burnt and ripped apart, you know, ripped up, it's what's it worth? 100. No matter what it does or what happens to it, right? Yeah. So why do we say, oh, you know, I had an accident or I did this or I did that, and then we just think we're worthless, when in fact that's never the case?
Amen to that. That's exactly what I'm saying. And the only difference between me and what a lot of other people are doing is I have provided the tools where you can easily, where anybody can easily and readily access the state of unconditionality, of more positive energy, not by having to jump through these hoops of fires, years of therapy, if only I could do this and only I could do that, just right here, right now. That is already in each and every one of us. That unconditional potential is in each and every one of us. That unconditional love is in each and every one of us. Each and every one of us is a light. Each and every one of us is, in fact, a luminous being of love. And the ability to touch on that is what makes a person enormously attractive, is what makes a person function at their best in a flow state, in a state of extraordinary confidence, productivity and success. It's not that, oh, now I feel so happy I don't work. It's now I feel so free and good. Now I can do anything. Now I can complete that project. Now I can get these new ideas. Now I can do what I want to do in life and succeed in it.
And so, Pharaoh, all of this wonderful gift wrapped in brown paper and tied with a bow is available just from the gift?
It's available inside every human being. The gift is a
way
to help you help yourself to access it.
Yeah,
the gift is a way to help you help. I beg your pardon?
We're selling a product, Pharaoh.
Yes. The gift is a way. Listen, you're selling a product, and that's why you're selling it, but I'm making the product, and that's why it has such a high LOC, because I want people to know that this is what they are, that this is what they have inside of themselves, that everything else is an illusion. It's a limitation that has been placed upon them accidentally by programming in the process of growing up that has made us less, to appear less than what we really are. And the gift is a way of easily, readily, and immediately, to some extent, start that process of piercing through and accessing those goodies that we have inside of us. Yes?
Yes.
Good. So we can all agree on that then. So last week we took a couple questions from our listeners, and of course that caused a few more questions to come up. And I'd like to just jump in because I think it relates a little, quite a bit, to what you've been talking about in terms of conditional self-esteem and love. And so the question, and this is from John in New York, is: does love relate to the level of consciousness, and what are levels of consciousness?
Well, that is a very key question. If love is an emotion, then the answer is not very much. But if love is this other concept that I've been attempting to develop to some extent during this interview, what is a level of consciousness? A level of consciousness means how much you are evolved as a human being, going from somebody that's in a semi-comatose situation, a complex of reactive fears and so forth, on up to a genius, on up to a creative genius, on up to a saint person, on up to somebody who's, the person who in modern times evolved the scale, the idea of levels of consciousness being measured. Dr. Hawkins puts at the 1,000 mark, he says, for example, Jesus Christ. So here you have the idea of somebody who is completely loving. So the idea of someone who is completely loving and who is one with everything. So the idea of Christ consciousness, of unity consciousness. So in my scale of consciousness, it's one with the one that's within everyone is the top of the scale. It's the 1,000. You're all inclusive, but not just on this level, with all of the levels. We're not just an angel some of the time. We're an angel all of the time. So that's at the high end. But how do you calibrate or talk about or think about the other end of the scale, where it's not all lovey-dovey and it's not all creative genius and it's not just all me being able to go through another day and really be happy about it? What's at the low end of the scale? Well, hatred, you know? At the low end of the scale, the level of consciousness would say, you know, I'm going to go out and kill somebody, maybe a serial murderer or somebody like that. That's a very low level of consciousness. There's no sense of in somebody who will serially murder somebody, and I don't want to go into the gory details. My background is in psychology, so unfortunately I've had to study some of this stuff, but I never liked it. But the idea is that people are just objects, and you just use them and throw them away. So to kill somebody means nothing to you. Well, the idea of levels of consciousness is that at a low level of consciousness, people are just things. But there are, even if you don't if you're not really that way, but you have a lot of burden of negative programming, for example, a lot of shame, on the scale of consciousness, we're ranging from 1 to 1,000, shame calibrates out as approximately 20. Well, that's extraordinarily low. My God, 20? And yet, do we know anybody who has any shame whatsoever? And yet, are they functioning at a 20? Well, we all have some shame to some extent, or at least most of all of us have shame.
I think if you delve deeply enough, that you would have to include pretty much everybody.
I think you're right. I just there are exceptions. There are exceptional people, but part of most of us has some aspect that's functioning at that low level of shame. So shame and these things that we talk about that are blockers of consciousness, that are the reversals, such as low self-esteem, such as shame and guilt and embarrassment and fear, these are the things that suppress or push down our ability to express our spirit, our joy of life, our life force. They act like throwing too many logs on a fire. It snuffs out the flame, or it makes it go very smoky and dull. And that's what a low level of consciousness is. And we cannot be loving and kind and generous and full and open-hearted when we're scared to death, when we're traumatized to smithereens, when we're have a black rock of guilt on our heart. These things, when we hate ourselves, we can't love other people, and we can't have good relationships with other people when we are in this negative relationship with ourselves. So in my world, level of consciousness and level of love expressed is almost the same thing.
Beautifully said.
Poor Scott, he's having a stunned moment. That is very rare. So when we raise self-esteem, how do we relate that to love?
Well, I think I was just saying that that in a sense, raising self-esteem is raising our love. If we can really raise our self-esteem, we will experience it in our relationship with others. We will...
Well, I would like to relate a personal experience, you know, with the gift. I mean, it somewhat reflects what Scott described from his holiday, I think it was one or two episodes ago, where he was operating at a much better mind space or emotional space with his loved one.
Heart space.
Okay, sure. Yes, thank you for clarifying. Yes. Anyway, so it's this just making better decisions. You know, I mean, you sort of jumped all over me as if it were my question. It was an external question. I have no problem getting up in the morning and not starting it with, oh God, another day. Mine is more like, what wonderful experience will today bring? And I have absolutely zero resistance going to do what I do because I love doing it.
Good for you.
And, you know, when I was asking, well, how am I going to have people continue to work in shitty jobs? Pardon my language if this is not legal on a podcast. But that's what we have, you know. Like, what happens with people who would like to be actors but instead are waiting on tables, or people who would like to be engineers but instead are cleaning toilets? You know, why is that? And what will there be anybody left to clean toilets?
There will be. Those will be the people which get a huge amount of joy and happiness out of contributing. And I think it's a different way of looking at life in terms of, there are things that we all have to do, and we have a choice of doing them with joy and love or doing them with resentment. And things like toilets are very easy to say, well, you know, that's something everybody should do with resentment because nobody likes to clean up the mess and blah, blah, blah. And I think that's totally wrong. I think
Right on, Scott. There's nothing inherently bad about cleaning a toilet. There's one of the most favorite jobs I ever had was waiting on tables. Why? I loved waiting on people. Can I get you something else? Do you like that? You don't like that? What's wrong with it? Let me fix that for you. I liked it. It felt great.
Let me tell you the toilet story, because you reminded me of when I was first employed in my first job in a grocery store, and we would work till 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, so the store closed at 10, and we would have cleanup. So you do your jobs and everything, and at the end of the night, of course, the last thing we would do is someone would have to go up and clean the toilets. And I can, as you were talking, Martin, actually I had a flashback to, you know, the way I cleaned the toilets, right? It was, I would get up there, I'd have my mop, I'd have my pail, I had my cleaners, I had my swishy things, and there was two sinks, a urinal and a toilet, or there was two toilets, depending on which one I was in. And I remember, you know, I would just swish this stuff all around, and I made a bigger mess than there was before. And the assistant manager came in one day, and he was saying, like, you know, can't you clean this toilet neatly? And I laughed at him, and I said, look, I'm going to mop up at the end, so why am I concerned about whether I get everything into the, you know, spray everything just perfectly in the sink or the urinal or whatever. It's, you know, it's not a spraying on me. And I'm swishing around with a lot of enthusiasm. And he says, yeah, that's true, you are. So there would be this bigger mess, and then I would just mop it all up and be done. And it took like 10 minutes, maybe 15 minutes, because we did it every day. It wasn't like there was anything grimy that you had to really get at.
This is a good example. And what we're talking about now is really awesome, because a lot of people are going, you know, like, again, it's that conditional thing. It's like, I have to change some condition in my life for me to be happy. Well, my son is 43 years old. He's an environmental chemist. He does an important job, and being a chemist and working with the environment was his life dream. But when he was young, his favorite job was cleaning tables. Cleaning tables. Okay? Why? Where is the joy in cleaning tables? It's grimy, it's dirty, it's another one of those toilet things. Well, I like cleaning too. There's an immediate reward. You can immediately see that you've made something better, that you've improved it. You can look at it before, you can look at it after, and you go, hey. And you know, this is something that's actually missing in our society overall, is that we don't have this hands-on relationship with our product. It's an assembly line world. And we don't get to see directly, often, the result of our endeavor. Even like the job that I'm in, where I develop products and I get them to, you know, fortunately I have Martin in my life, who's been so gracious and wonderful. He says, you know what, you do the inventing and let me do the selling. I said, great. But I also sell, and there's this lady, and she ordered the gift from me, and 2 years later she ordered another one. I looked it up. You know, 2 years later. Her gift lasted her for 2 years. Okay, I didn't know what was going on. I said, sure, thank you for the payment, like I always do. I always acknowledge somebody. It's like, thank you for the order and thank you for the payment when she ordered her new gift. And I said, I see that you ordered from us before. Would you mind saying what your experience was? And I was just opening myself up, I didn't have any idea what she was going to say. It was like there's that much disconnect between what I'm doing with my hands to create, to invent, to develop, and manufacture something. And here's this lady, 2 years later, she writes back, she said, I love your products. You know, she says, I love your products. I bought this 2 years ago, and I just used the last of it last week. It lasted for 2 years. And she says, I love your products. And then she went on to describe how it makes her happy when she uses it. She had a problem in one eye, and she was upset about driving. And she puts a little on her wrist and a tiny bit on the notch in her throat. And off she would go. And she says she feels relaxed when she drives, and she feels happy, and she loves the products. So 2 years later, I get the feedback that I did something that's worthwhile to help somebody else. you know, it's we and I was fortunate because many of us don't get that feedback.
Well,
and there you have it. So these low level jobs. So just I want to say these low level jobs. I want to be an actor, but I'm waiting tables. Maybe waiting tables can be the emotional fuel, the up that you get from connecting with people and serving people and working with people can be the emotional fuel that lets you do acting jobs and not maybe get money, but you're acting. It's like if it's really the love of your life to do that, then you don't need to be paid for it. You don't need to be anything for it. You just want to do it. So do it.
You know,
Farrell, you remind me of a story of a friend of mine who was going through a toll booth. I think it was the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco. And at this particular time, they had these booths, and there would be an individual in the booth, and you'd either throw the money in or you give the money to this person. I'm not sure exactly. But he basically had to have an interaction with the person in the toll booth. And he'd done it many, many times, and most times it would be some grumpy, miserable, sullen person there who was just, you know, because they're standing there for 8 hours and grumpy people are giving them money grudgingly. And he was absolutely amazed because it was a young black man and he was happy as happy could be. And so he watched a little closer and the guy had ear sets in and he had this music cranked up and he was like dancing in the booth. And so he asked this fellow, he says, you know, you're really happy. This is just great. You see, oh, yeah, man. He says, they're paying me 8 hours a day to practice my moves. I'm going to be one of the best dancers in the world. And
that's a great story.
And he was just like, he was just bopping and hopping as he was giving the money and as happy as could be. And he had this music blaring. And it was just great. So,
well, whether you use the gift, whether you use the gift or not, let's all do some random act of happiness and just see what it's like to be unconditional in our happiness.
Yeah.
Okay, Martin.
There we go. Yeah, no, thank you. I love poking and prodding to see what comes out. I heard, who was this one? One of the speakers that I've listened to, he says, when you squeeze an orange, what comes out of it? Orange juice. Why? It's full of it. So when you squeeze a person, whatever comes out of it, that's what he's full of.
Great, great
yep.
analogy. I like that one. Okay, well, once again, the half hour has just flown by, and I want to thank you, Farrell, for joining us. Smart Minerals is absolutely amazing, the gift and the freedom from fear, trauma, and...
Fear, shock, and trauma, yes.
Fear, shock, and trauma. And, Martin, if somebody wanted to know more about these amazing products and how they can raise their consciousness, what should they do?
Same place, same time. The website is life-enthusiast.com. The phone number is 1-866-543-3388. I think we will have to bring Farrell back, finally, after all these stories, to talk about the other three products, freedom from shame, freedom from guilt, and perhaps even the normalizer, and perhaps even the heaven and earth.
Oh, my.
Wow, so we got a lot of work for you, Farrell.
Okay, I'm ready.
Okay, so until next
you.
Time.
Again, thanks for giving me the opportunity to share some of this positivity, some of this up energy with you guys. It's fun for me. Thanks.
Awesome.
Our pleasure.
Restoring vitality to you and to the planet.
Thank you.